Conference is being recorded.
Welcome to part two of the Citizen Media Online Engagement Webinar hosted by edemocracy.org. If you want to listen to part one on Citizen Media, go to edemocracy.org/webinars where you can find information about that. So part two here now, we're going to focus in on issues forums. And this relates to the history of edemocracy.org. We know way back in 1994 is actually when we got started, and we've sort of evolved to where we focus on issues forums. And before I actually give you a little history, let me just kind of provide a little context about why we focus on this particular model. One of the key things is that the problem we see that we're trying to solve is there's a lack of participation in local democracy. And some of the reasons are time. You know, people have two jobs in the household. You have the loss of trust and the need for accountability in government. We've had a loss of civility in society. And people are, honestly, just don't think their voices will be heard. That's one of the problems. We also need to think about moving not just about the number of people who participate, but actually think about how do you make participation more effective? How do you provide timely access to information and opinions when it matters? How do you build more openness and inclusion, new voices? How do you actually build social capital and not just have those who show up all the time continue to participate online, but actually build it to bring in new people and more people? How do you make things more deliberative rather than just reactionary or just protest-oriented? And ultimately, you know, how do you allow people to or help people experience the lasting power and influence? Those are some of the challenges. And what eDemocracy is working to do is we're working to build what I call anywhere, anytime democracy. Anywhere, anytime. So much of our life is delivered to us or available to us 24/7. We can't all go to the 7 o'clock meeting. And to be honest, to be effective in local politics, local community, you often have to go to a certain place at a certain time. Not to say you shouldn't do in-person engagement, but to realize that to be competitive, local democracy has to have viable options for anywhere, anytime participation. We're interested in what we call it the two-way online town hall meeting. We're not interested in sort of taking the local blogosphere, the democratized punditry of national politics, and replicating that locally. It's very sort of a male-dominated Hyde Park comments. Someone actually emailed in the question about online news comments, and I clump this with online blog comments. They typically are anonymous. And some of the nastiest local politics you'll find anywhere in a community is actually right on the newspaper's website or right on the local blog where people just aren't accountable to what they say. And it's just not the model we're interested in. We don't think that builds the capacity of the community to solve problems or to simply allow everyday people who don't think of politics as sport, but actually think of politics as a way to make a difference, you know, they all leave those types of spaces. We're also building a demand for local information and news in a democracy. As our forums are created in different communities, we're basically creating an audience that digests the stuff, that grabs reports from government, that grabs articles from the newspaper in an independent space and uses it for dialogue and exchange. We're also working to build a low-cost, volunteer-based network of service clubs like local democracy committees. Each of our issues forums in our 15 communities has a committee of some kind. Now, the committees don't meet, and there's just a good forum manager who tends to do most of the facilitation, or they do meet and they do other activities beyond just the forum. It really varies, and it's something we're actually going to talk more about at the end. Little context, we created the world's first election information website back in 94. We had a statewide politics forum called Minnesota Politics. And when the election was over, people kept talking. By accident, we discovered that it was our job to be a trusted, neutral host of ongoing dialogue among people who disagree, or may disagree, which is pretty unique. I don't have a slide here, but there's a, when they mapped out sort of right-wing and left-wing blogs nationally in the United States, the right-wingers talk to each other, the left-wingers link to each other, and they rarely link across party lines, very rare. And so the natural tendency is to use these tools to organize like minds, and often nationally, and we want to flip it upside down where people actually organize with dislike minds in the common interest local space. And, you know, while you can say talk is cheap, I actually believe that conversation is cost effective, and that's sort of our one of our key concepts. Also, blogs. Now, this slide is almost sort of old. I should have a social network, slide up there now, but about two, three years ago, everyone, it was blogs. And I really think that blogs are more, like I said, more Hyde Park and less conversational. They can be conversational. I think the locally grown Northfield, which I showed in part one, is a great example of where they've actually done it differently. The tool does not necessarily mean that it's going to be sort of a mini broadcast type model versus a two-way dialogue model. But I think it's important to realize it's not just about having a blog. There's lots of different tools. And as I mentioned about my Sidewalks for Democracy Online article, you need to have, you know, these digital versions of various public spaces, whether it be the place for rallies in the rotunda of the state capitol here in Minnesota, whether it be the committee room, whether it be the steps of the capitol, whether it be a conference room in the city hall. We need lots of different types of online spaces that are truly public, not just sort of the shopping mall version of a public space that's on a commercial site or an individual site that can be turned down, turned off, or whatever at a whim. You also have a need for decorum and civility. It isn't just about creating a free space where anyone can do what they want. It's actually about trying to craft a space that sustains broad interest and engagement. So local issues forums are, you know, sort of the online town hall. We do them at the citywide level. We do them in neighborhoods. We do them in regions. They tend to work in places where people have strong identity. So Cass Lake, Leech Lake, which is a new forum, it sort of includes the city of Cass Lake, a small town, but also the Leech Lake Indian Reservation, and obviously a strong identity, where we tried a Twin Cities Metro Issues Forum about, I don't know, 5 years ago, and no one calls themselves a Twin City. I mean, we have people on our Minneapolis forum and on our St. Paul forum. People identify more strongly with that. So it's if you're trying to use a forum to create a new sense of identity, you have to actually seed it and take it and push it more so than you would a small town or a town with a strong sense of identity. I know we have someone on here from regional Ohio where we actually do have a forum, and you'll see that it's important that most of the dialogue happens when people seed topics. So where's local power? So that's a key concept, is that if you think about it, it's not about creating some alternative space. To me, it's about mapping out power in the community and trying to place a public space in the center of it. And having a space that's actually not just, it's basically owned by the community, and we try to do that via edemocracy.org with our local committees. A couple of stories. So one evening, Annie Young got home from the park board meeting in Minneapolis, and that night they voted to bring Dairy Queen in to take over the concession stands at Harriet, Lake Harriet. She posted a message saying, "Hey, folks, here's what we did tonight. You know, what do you think?" A huge discussion. As it turned out, the Daily Paper did not have a reporter there because of cutbacks, and so there was no coverage of the meeting. Big discussion, hundreds of posts, about 100 posts, and good ice cream, bad ice cream, hey, you white liberals, give us our soft serve, hey, if the city is losing money, why not, you know, have somebody generate some revenue, and so forth. 2 weeks later, the meeting was packed, a couple hundred people, and the park board reversed their decision. Now, it's pretty rare to point to when an elected official, someone asked a question, this is in Minneapolis, where the Dairy Queen story is from, where an elected official starts a discussion, closes the loop with a change in direction by an elected body. Typically what happens on our forums is more related to agenda setting. A story shows up in the newspaper, people comment on it, and it clearly impacts the next generation, or, which we like, another version would be a discussion emerges about, here's an example, crows. There's like congregations of crows in Minneapolis during the West Nile virus thing, right? So everyone's like, well, what are all these crows? What about West Nile? And, you know, they had, and that, you know, emerging as a story in the local paper. So a lot of things that should be in the news are discussed in our forums. You also find that the journalists are more apt to follow our stuff in their own forums because here it's a neutral space where they don't quote people on their comment boards very often in the actual paper, although some papers do that. So another story, Dory in St. Paul, there's actually a 10-minute video if you want to watch it at the edemocracy.org/experience about this whole sort of use of the forum during the issue with the urban ethanol plant. And she has a little video talking about how, you know, they were able to use the forum to tell the rest of the city, people across town, how bad the smell was and how sick they felt, and they felt it was a really important way to help them organize. And one of the key things about issues forums is while they're issue neutral and designed to be neutral, any citizen can use them to be an advocate. And in some ways, we're delivering to people the ability to quickly put an issue on the table and to basically, you know, eliminate 1, 2, 3 months of organizing work to sort of set up a coalition of folks that want to get involved in your common cause. In my neighborhood on Issues Forum, there actually is an effort to start a community garden. The idea came out on the forum. People discussed it. They're having a meeting next week. They're trying to identify a location, and we'll see if they can or not. But basically, it came completely because the forum was there to allow people who had a similar interest in the community to decide to try to push that issue to get a community garden. Another example is Jamal in Minneapolis. These examples are a couple years old, but they're still relevant today. The bus strike in Minneapolis, the general line in the press was, it's not so bad. And Jamal came on the forum and posted a note saying, this bus strike is really hurting our community. He's on video saying, I got a call from the mayor, I got a call from the newspaper, and it ended up sort of changing the discussion. They realized, you know, there are a lot of folks that are hurting from this bus strike. Their story just hasn't been told. He felt the forum was a really useful place. Now, we had done outreach here and there to the Somali community, which is quite large, 30,000-plus in Minneapolis. No one really joined for the first couple of years when I was doing that outreach. I'd make a call here or there or drop an email. But when it mattered to them, when they needed to get their story told, they came to the forum. And I think it's really important. Well, it's really important to do aggressive outreach to different voices. Ultimately, the forum has to be presented in a way that actually makes it useful to people. They have to see it as helping them achieve some objective. They're not just going to come there to be a showcase. They really want to have it make sense to them. And so it's really important to make it sense, to actually put it in the center of power and explain that rather than just say, oh, come here and raise your voice, it's important. That doesn't cut it for most communities of interest. They really need to know that their input in the forum will actually give them power or influence. Mayor Rybak is less active now. He has his own 10,000-person email list. But when he announced his candidacy in 2001, he actually announced it on the forum before he announced it in person. You tend to find that a lot of these spaces that people who want to be elected officials sort of test out their lungs a little bit or, interact, perhaps more so than those who are elected, although we do have a number of elected officials that continue to participate in Minneapolis and in a number of our communities and also in our neighborhood forums in England. You see more elected officials participate at that level. They're all monitoring the forum, but it can be a pretty vigorous and active discussion, and if they come in a couple times a year and remind us that they're there, it's actually a very good thing. And ultimately, again, if you want the forum to actually be useful for an elected official, they need coaching, a little training. They need to see that it actually helps them pursue their agenda that they were elected to do. To say it's on your shoulders and they're obligated to participate just because it's important, again, doesn't cut it. So a couple more examples of topics that we've seen on issues forums, local schools discussions, a discussion about support for area war veterans, neighborhood parks, water quality, crime and policing are big issues, particularly in neighborhood forums. Candidates, it depends upon the city. I mean, some cities don't want to have a lot of election talk. Others have quite a bit. Feral cat, that's a problem in Canterbury, New Zealand, in particular. And noise pollution from the local racetrack. All examples of very local issues. And one of the hard things to explain about issues forums is if I send someone to the website, they'll be like, what's this? You know, because the local issues are often very local, and so the relevancy to you as an outsider looking in is often difficult. So you have to sort of imagine, you know, like the top 5 or 10 topics in your community being discussed and what they might be, and that helps sort of bring it home to people. Example of sort of how it looks. I mean, our site is very, as someone said, sort of boring Craigslist-like. It's very simple. We use a mix of email and web tools, and I'll talk more about that in a few minutes. But essentially, this is the web view, and, you know, they have all the different topics, and you can see it on the web, and you can get it via email. You can upload a photo. You can have a profile. And I'll talk more about our rules in a minute. Because in some ways, the technology is more of a commodity. And while we can tailor and personalize sort of how we do things based on our philosophy, essentially, a lot of this is more about the process of how you start a forum and how you facilitate. So where are we today? And for those of you who are interested in starting new forums, we are interested in having you work with us. I'll put a caveat out right now to say that we have grown since 2004 from 3 to 15 communities. We've grown fivefold. And we're feeling some growth pains. We are focusing a lot on some issues of now that we're in 15 communities, maybe we can add another 5, and then we'll focus more on deepening our model, expanding the number of people, the more neighborhood forums within towns where we are established, and really think about how we deepen what we do rather than just take on the whole world, because that may not be sustainable, because the startup process is much more expensive than sort of deepening and sustaining in terms of staff time and the like. But here's where we are. So here's where we are in Minnesota and Las Vegas, New Mexico, and central Ohio. It varies from 1,000 people in Minneapolis, which was our first local forum in 1998, to 87, where Winona had a relaunch, and they actually dropped below our 100 requirement, and we need to sort of kick them in gear to sort of bump up past that, to some of our new forums, which are working toward 100, in Bemidji that just got 100 and opened last week. So congratulations, Bemidji. Just to note, Bemidji and Cass Lake are actually next to each other, or like maybe 20 miles apart. Cass Lake has a majority Native American population. Bemidji obviously is very much majority white, but a substantial Native American minority. And so there's always been tension between these communities over time, and so you'll see people in Cass Lake talking about, experiences in Bemidji. Well, Bemidji doesn't want to be left behind either with this tool, and so we just need to see how these forums relate and interact with one another over time. Because the Cass Lake, the town itself is like 800. So and I'm not sure, the reservation, I've heard numbers of like 10,000 total for this big, much larger area. But as a percentage of the population, this may be actually our most popular forum. And now we're also doing more neighborhood forums, which in Minneapolis, and then we have two on track in St. Paul, and then in Bristol and Oxford. We've had more success with neighborhood forums in the UK than council-wide forums with elected officials and the like. But it's a pretty exciting growing network. All right, so how to start one of these critters. This is, again, more of a training how-to approach, and I'm going to be pretty granular here because I want you to be able to take this away. Now, that's not Steve Krantz talking. Now, that was from I missed taking that out, but Steve has been helping us with some of the trainings as well in person. So how does this work? All right, so you take an individual citizen, right? They all have their own personal networks, whether it be email networks, word of mouth, now social networks, and we're trying to move them from a private citizen toward being a public e-citizen. So we understand that they're starting with this asset of lots of different networks. You declare a space, an issues forum, a community blog, whatever it is. You basically say that this geographic scoped place exists online. All right. In our case, we use a tool called GroupServer, which is an open source Yahoo Groups, Google Groups-like tool. It combines an email list and a web forum with some very basic social networking type aspects to it. You have what you call a charter. You define the scope. You basically say this space it relates to this place or these issues or and the like, local issues, not national issues and the like. All right, so then the next step is you bring in the people. And we require 100 people in a forum to open, which means you have to actually do real outreach. The Internet is scattered with thousands and thousands and thousands of local places with 2 or 3 pet members, or very few members with no traffic. The technology obscures the work required to really recruit people one at a time. Just finding the right physical events and passing on a sheet of paper, that's one of the key things to do. I'll talk more about that later. The other key lesson for us is sticky, right? Or it's kind of an old term, but the idea is this. When someone signs in, or signs on, the default is email. They will get everything via email unless they turn it off. They can choose a digest version or they can choose to be web only, but essentially, we're invasive. If you sign up, it's going to go in your mailbox and we're going to build bridges between people. So if you want to build bridges between different types of people, you have to be part of their everyday life And if you have to, if they have to choose to come to you each day, they turn on their go on the web, whatever. Forget it. They're just not going to come. You know. And at a minimum, if you do a web-based system that's similar to this, you got to have at least an email notice for each as a default for each post or each topic. And a lot of people opt out of that when they register. If you force people to opt in, that you're just not going to be building a strong community unless you're like a large newspaper or a very large traffic site where you have critical mass. But if you're dealing with smaller populations and you're trying to, like I said, create new relationships, be smart, get them to opt in, and help them switch email off as soon as they sign up if they don't like it, because you want to still keep them in the loop. All right, so a couple things. When participants sign up, they agree to some key rules. Besides the charter, they also agree to use their real name. Now, people always ask, well, how do you prove that? Well, we find that most people don't lie, and those that do, when they're talking about local issues and they know too much, we figure out that something's up, and then we suspend that account. It's very rare that actually happens. And so it's good enough to require real names without confirming their identity with their credit card or whatever it might be. I would say, though, in St. Paul, they've had a few issues during an election where people were trying to game the forum and actually, in this case, creating accounts for people who did exist in the community and then posting once for them, like almost like a letter to the editor, and then disappearing. And so they were real people, but it was kind of quirky, and there were some that we thought weren't real. And in St. Paul, you actually have to submit a phone number when you want to post the first time and an address, and so you can they can follow up and see what, much more quickly. But we have not had that problem in other communities. So the next thing is that people also can understand that they could be suspended for violations, that if they, their civility rules do one-on-one attacks or, you know, personal attack, or if they, you know, go out of a lot, they can get official warnings and be suspended. But we don't actually remove what they say. We actually leave that up. It's just that if they basically can lose their right to participate in the future. Only in very rare, like one out of 1,000 posts or less, have we removed a post or edited a post for libel concerns or something. It's a very rare thing, so we're trying to be a non-censorship kind of place. A thing that we do, which is really quirky, because we use email aggressively, we actually technologically limit people in most forums to only 2 posts in 24 hours. So if you try to post too many times, it'll say you cannot post again for 5 hours. And nobody does this, and it works. It works so well. And the reason it works is that it's completely neutral. It's not some moderator or facilitator or somebody telling you what you can or can't say. It's that you have an equal opportunity, just like everybody else, and you agreed to it when you started, to not basically flood the forum. Because the tragedy of the online commons is when 2 people or 3 people put too much into it, go back and forth, have a big flame war, whatever it might be, and they drive the audience away. Right? It's not a public space if you don't have the public. And most sites are basically about who's there and how to serve the people who are there versus how to serve who are posting versus how to serve those who are reading. And if you actually focus on building a readership, that actually creates the incentive for higher quality content. It all sort of, you know, works that way. The other thing, the key thing is that we don't moderate posts, although technically we tend to moderate people who are new subscribers before they post the first time to prevent some sort of basically a fly-by spammer from coming in, creating an account and posting. We haven't had that trouble yet, a bot-wise, you know, like an automated thing, but we have had people who clearly don't signed up because they want to reach people in that community and don't actually have an interest in actually participating based on the scope, and we do catch those folks before we turn them to unmoderated. That's a lot less work for a facilitator, and I'll talk a little bit more about forum managers in a minute. All right, so the idea is that if you put this forum in the center of real power, you've created a many-to-many space, you've brought publishing down to the level of can you send an email? Can you push reply? Which is 10 times less intimidating for normal people than having to log onto a website and figure out how to post to a site that requires registration. You know, posting on a blog, a comment, is pretty easy if you don't require registration, but it's much less intimidating to push reply. And it's not just about who that you're posting to people on the forum, it's that each person is somebody, and they all have their own personal networks. And that's sort of my last slide with the image here, is that once you have the space, there may be 200 people here, right? But each person knows 100 people, or whatever it might be. The mayor might pass it along in City Hall and say, hey, can someone answer this question? The local media will take a story idea, and it'll show up in the newspaper, and so on and so far, so on and so forth. Now, one thing I should note, I have the word gadfly here. These forums will attract people who, at public meetings, have the microphone turned off on them or don't have the ability to follow rules. And that's why we have rules, and it's important to enforce them equally on everyone. And if somebody is name-calling and they have some different issues about why they do that, you can't give them a free ride. You got to actually, you know, fairly enforce the rules on everyone. But I want to point that out because our rules and our guidelines and our sort of position makes it legitimate for you to deal with people, because not everyone has the interest of the whole community in mind when it comes to participating in these forums. There are some people who would prefer to shut the thing down in order to just have their say. And it's a hard thing to deal with. We just had an issue like that in Brighton and Hove where someone was suspended for no longer agreeing with the terms, who wanted to bring up all kinds of international issues and was very abrasive. And it took us months to deal with this person, but finally, you know, we realized that either he goes or the forum goes. And that's a pretty rare experience that you would have in a forum with that, but it's important to know that we have a base to try and help you deal with that. Because ultimately, if like I said, one or two people basically drive away your audience, you know, might as well shut the thing down. So I mentioned email, web, so that's really important. We also have web feeds. I won't talk more about that. There's the web view, you know, a little information about the forum. We now have like a picture related to each forum, and we actually have a small grant that we're using right now to improve the look and feel. It's just taken a while because it's not quite large enough to really pay someone really talented. We're working with folks in New Zealand within their framework, and so it's going to get better, I promise, but it takes time. And it looks like what they call a linear web forum. And here it is, same post here in your email, my email account. And so that's a key thing, just to hammer that home. So we want to share our lessons. We actually have, I have a link at the very end, a guidebook. We're actually updating. Carol Hayward's actually on the call from New Zealand. She used to work in Bristol, and I work with her on different projects. We're working to update our guidebook to make it shorter. Instead of 60 pages, it'll hopefully be 40 or less, that you can use to really get even more detail on how to start one and how to facilitate a forum. And ultimately, if one community joins us, we hope to help 10 or 100 other communities help do their own thing. And particularly, it's sort of blogs and forums and email lists and social networks, they all kind of blend together. It's less about choosing one tool over the other. It's about how do you use the tool that you prefer, or as these tools blend together, just how do you actually use them in a way to promote civil dialogue. So a little startup overview. So we're shifting from now I've sold you, right? So you're ready to do this. And so let's talk about how you get it going. All right. So you need a small committee, 5 people, you know, who support you as the person who wants to start one for your community. By having it be more than just a single individual initiative, it actually gives you a base. You do have to recruit what we call a forum manager. That's the person who basically, when the forum opens, they're the one who spends 15 minutes a day or so, you know, basically dealing with issues, sometimes seeding topics. But we also want you to post about this later. Think about other volunteer roles. Recruit 100 participants. And like I said, community events in Cass Lake, they had sign-up sheets at the post office, at the local food shelf. They've done 2 physical events in Cedar Riverside. They have a big dinner, a multicultural dinner, where we're trying to recruit a large East African with the majority population in that area. And we got better recruitment that night of that target population than any other effort online. Very important. And they now have 100 in Cedar Riverside, and I would guess about 30 to 40 are East African, and that is huge to create a forum that is reflective of the actual population. You open the forum and you facilitate. So the steering committee, think of it as like a local democracy committee, kind of like a service club. It could also be like a committee of an existing group. We're working with folks in Grand Rapids that are in other towns up north Minnesota called the Northern Community Internet Project. We're basically sharing committees. And we're very open to more ideas about how we could work with small media organizations and others, other community groups that basically have a community outreach purpose, where they essentially serve as the committee. The key thing is to have a buffer between anybody who politically would want to shut it down or censor it and how it's run. So even in the UK, when we work with local councils, you know, we gave councils the option if they wanted to actually have it be a government initiative, they would have to have a citizen committee. As an example, and we're trying to make sure that essentially we create a buffer both ways. And it needs a real convening spirit. So the people who are involved in this can't all be part of one political faction, They can't be the group that all lost the election. They can't be all one political party. Parties are less important at the local level in most places. They have to have an interest in actually giving other people a voice versus just trying to get their way on an issue. Okay, so let me keep going here. You draft your charter. A short description of what it is. That one or two sentences is the most important thing you'll do in terms of how you promote self-regulation. It sits on top of the rules, but basically that's what people will read first, and people will hold each other accountable to that more so than you as a form manager having to do so. Mapping local power. So when you sit down into recruitment, it's not just about getting, you know, sort of the average citizen. It's also about, you know, who has power. So elected officials, journalists, civil servants, anybody who has access or control of resources in the community, you want to try to reach out to them up front and basically say to them, it's not on your shoulders, but we're trying to do something that's different than those nasty anonymous blogs or the reader comments that you'll never touch. We're trying to have a space which people are accountable to their real names. It's going to be focused on local issues, and you may actually be able to use it to get your work done. And it's, to be honest, I mean, this stuff is still kind of like quicksand for someone who's used to controlling information and someone who's used to sort of basically just all that face-to-face kind of, you know, interaction. Because a politician can look at somebody who's angry with them and see them in the eye to eye. They know how to react to that. They often don't know how to react to something that may or may not be interpreted as an angry email or something. We have to build those skills up, but at the same time, we have to, get them in the loop early so that they actually see themselves as part of it and shaping it versus a year later when they're like, you know, they'll remember all the bad things they heard that happened, even though there were 90 good things for every 10 bad things. And that's, I think, one thing important to point out. You combine rules, technology, real names, the things that we have, that deals with sort of like 80-90% of the problems. The other 10% is this form manager role and that facilitation. But it may be that we have like a 5% or 10% error rate where, you know, to keep things low cost, we just don't control everything to the extent that someone who would want a perfect space would. But that's what makes it affordable. So you have to have a tolerance that things won't always work, that people won't always be nice. And that also makes life a little more interesting anyway. So just, you know, it's important to have reasonable expectations about that and help people realize that, you know, it's got to move on to the next topic if something's been, a bit distracting. So recruiting 100 members, again, build it and they'll never come. If you build it, they will come. It just doesn't work. One thing about virtual door knocking here, about the in-person piece, is that we've updated the form, but basically you have to have a separate box for each email letter, because people, if they have a straight line, they scribble, and you can't read, a quarter of the addresses if you have a straight line. It's one of those little lessons we've learned. And we also, we had someone who went door to door in their neighborhood. That was a little too aggressive of an outreach, because you had all those people who signed up who said, oh sure, they didn't know what it was. So, normally if you go to community events, and have time to explain it, but if you just go door to door, while that might be good for a neighborhood forum, you probably want to send an email inviting them to join rather than just signing them up to suddenly getting, you know, 5 posts a day or something. Facilitation, and I'll hurry up here so I know our time is, passed. The forum manager guides the forum, enforces the rules, and the rules also limit what the forum manager can do. And so, in some ways, we stop the forum manager from doing things that they'd be glad to be able to say to someone, oh, you know, I just can't do that, you know. And so people can get upset when the rules are applied to them. They think it's unfair, that they're not being treated equally as with others. They often are being treated fairly equally. It's just that people see themselves in isolation. We tend to try to deal with our rules in private, unless they get to a certain level, then they can be publicly posted. And it's kind of controversial, difficult to deal with. The idea initially was that when someone got a warning, publicizing it was more of a penalty than the actual crime, if that makes sense. But when someone gets 3 warnings, you know, yeah, you can make it public, and the person who got warned can make it public, and you can do different things. But it's kind of quirky, and it's just something that we've built up over time. And every few years we revise the rules and look for ways to improve them. And the key thing is to sort of have mostly self-regulation, which tends to be what happens most of the time. So some rules, and we're trying to actually build this out when we deepen. The forum manager, some forums have forum managers that not only enforce rules, but also seed discussions, post news items, and sort of are there as sort of like coaches for the forum. We think that that's actually too much to expect of just one person. Well, it's great if one person does all that. It's not normal, right, to be able to do all that. And so on that steering committee, as well as just participants in general, we're trying to have people think about themselves as discussion starters, someone who asks a question once a week or once a month when there's nothing, when the forum is light, or someone who goes out as a seeker and seeks out information. And one of the things that I do from time to time to help a forum that's been quiet, say Las Vegas, New Mexico, is really quiet for a month or two in the summer, and I guess enjoying the summer. But I went and got a press release off the local government website about graffiti. I posted it into the forum, and it led to like an 8 or 9 discussion thread on that press release. Going to government websites, grabbing the press releases, or grabbing that meeting announcement, or looking through the agenda and saying, oh, that looks interesting. People might want to talk about that. The more you can connect the discussion to what's in the paper or what's on the agenda, particularly things on the agenda that maybe haven't been in the paper or on the radio or whatever it might be, that brings it home to those who have power in the community, and they see it as relevant to what they're doing, and it allows the forum to be more agenda-setting because it actually is tying to things that are being decided upon. And the thing that we found, because with our mix of things, we have, in a good forum, 15 to 20% of people posting each month, which is really high. There's a whole concept called participation inequality, where between 1 and 7% of people actually are the ones that do all the posting. We have pretty good diversity of participation. I think part of it is the fact that if you can only post twice a day, before a discussion ultimately would die out, that third person or fourth person can enter in because the person who would have said everything held back because they realized, okay, I'm going to hold back for a while. That talking stick approach really works really well. So you open the forum. When we open a forum, we open with introductions now. It helps humanize it. People can open a forum when they get 50 people or more for moderated sort of introductions, because nothing works better at that stage once you've got the first batch of folks in that I found than seeing who's there. And then like, oh, I know that person, or oh, these are interesting people. I don't know them, but they that sounds like an interesting background or whatever it might be. And it really just helps build momentum for the recruitment. You can seed topics. You can have a launch topic if you want. In Canterbury, they've had guest speakers. In St. Paul, they had a State of the City Q&A with the mayor, and they actually also did some stuff on YouTube. Those can be pretty labor-intensive, but they can raise the value. And one of the nice things about an issues forum is basically you have a ready-made audience for online participation. In a community that, say, trying to do an online consultation, say, on a government website, if they don't have an audience already, they have to do all that recruitment from scratch. If you can actually say, well, why don't you do it here on our forum, and we'll work with you, you have a ready-made audience. And so that is actually you can move people from issue to issue, something to consider. And basically, over time, you're building the skills of e-citizenship. It's people becoming more familiar with how to use the government's website to find out what's on the agenda. And and when someone says, sees a link, there'll be a lot of things that are exposed to them. They just didn't know were out there across the sort of the local democracy space in that community. And it's really important to think about how people contribute based on how the value is based on what they contribute, not how they are served. It is on the shoulders of participants to create the value versus the government or the media or someone to sort of make it valuable for them. So the next thing about this committee piece is sort of a new slide here. I'm going to be testing this out with a new section in the guidebook or a new page or two. But essentially, most of the effort is about getting it going, and if you've gotten it going, it kind of can run on autopilot. But and sometimes when it runs on autopilot, it slows down its momentum. It doesn't grow as much as it could. You sort of end up with sort of what they call usual suspects. And so I think it's really important to think about how that committee can continue to build out the forum. Taylor asked a question about how can you speak to how you get that mix. I've actually lost track of what that question was related to, Taylor. So if you want to retype in that question, I appreciate it, or extrapolate on that. So one of the things would be to have regular outreach goals. Another piece would be to hold the forum manager accountable, to allow that person to sort of report how it's going. Typically, the forum manager will share with the little team. Behind the scenes, we have these like city name-team email lists. They would tell the team, I've issued a warning, and they might get some input there. And it may be the person who volunteered to be the form manager actually isn't the right person, and you'll want to find someone new. And eventually, you know, even though David Brower has been the form manager in Minneapolis for 10 years now, typically we don't expect form managers to stick around for a decade. 2-3 years might be a good term of service, and to think about how to then bring in the next person. And this is an idea that St. Paul has done a lot of work with. They've been elected with their chapter where they have a constitution on local officers locally. They have done sort of promoting the issues around the digital divide. They have volunteers that do trainings at a local library. But how do you promote local e-democracy as a whole? So, you know, maybe a review of the local government website about what they could do compared to other cities, or review of, you know, features that the local newspaper could or should have that other newspapers have that they don't. And also other special projects, online candidate debates, other types of activities. And so these are just some ideas, but the general idea is that as we deepen and build, we're going to provide and try to build out our support for what can happen once a forum is actually launched as a way to then kind of build upon that base. And I'll say the reason you want that base is that I have, from traveling the world, 27 countries, talking to lots of folks, seeing lots of big budget e-democracy projects fall on their face, others that have succeeded fairly well, but for the most part, I have found that an ongoing issues forum is probably one of the lowest cost investments in e-democracy that you can have that creates sustained value over time. And so if you can get that little foundation piece into a community, then your ability to go further and above that exists. If you don't have that base, it's going to take a lot more effort to do a lot of these special, exciting, new, whatever it might be, projects, if you don't have the base of sort of e-citizens. So I want to conclude now with a little bit about how we're different, and just one last story. What makes us different? Many to many with real names. It's a people-based model, focusing on an agenda setting. A lot of folks in the academic world talk about deliberation, and they're sort of measuring it based on sort of deliberative dialogue. And I think that agenda setting is good enough. if you set your goals too high, it's just really difficult to get there. Recruitment, the idea that, you know, that a lot of it's about really recruiting in person for an online network, that's pretty darn unique, and sort of something to follow through on. And technology choice. Most people, they do web-based stuff. They do email as an opt-in. For us, it's really giving people the option, and looking to the future, also trying to begin to innovate a little bit more around social networking type pieces that allow you to, instead of friending someone, the idea is that you could respect someone, and you could show the list of who you respect, and have or ways of rating posts, and different ways for the content to kind of, the best content to sort of rise to the top. Taylor Willingham asked a question about that mix of political views in the forum or in the committee, and I'm going to say in the forum, and one of the key things there is to really, in your charter and in your recruitment, you know, avoid terminology that would say, well, that's, you know, for a progressive city or whatever it might be. You do tend to find that those that are interested in openness and, you know, some of these engagement issues can be and tend to be left of center. It isn't always the case. And, you know, in Minneapolis, there is no representation for Republicans on the city council, yet they have a voice on our forum. I do think that there is an issue or a challenge. It's not just conservative talk radio, because we have some folks on the left that have been pretty abrasive. But there is, really on our statewide forum in Minnesota politics, which still exists, we've learned a lot about difference in communication styles. And the sort of a talk radio sort of politics of sports style often clashes with our goals and objectives. And, you know, it's a tough one, but I think it's really important. I often will say that if you want to have diversity in these spaces politically, you actually need to do extra outreach to conservatives and Republicans and like, and at the beginning, or you'll tend to sort of get, you know, all the goody-goody folks that just, you know, want everyone to love one another. So just to be honest, and so it's really important to do that. So one last story, and then we'll conclude this part of the session, and then we can also do some Q&A. I know folks have to get going, and I appreciate you sticking with us during this call. So this is actually way back when, 1998, when the Minneapolis Issues Forum was brand new. Jesse Ventura was elected governor, and our statewide forum was completely abuzz, completely abuzz. The city forum was quite quiet. And I came out of my home office in Minneapolis, and I noticed this really, 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 really big fat squirrel. And then another one, and another one, and another one, and it actually inspired me. I scurried back up to my home office, and I put together a post, and I basically said, are squirrels in such a high density ever considered a health risk? And this is an important lesson. If you're having trouble on your forum, talk about wildlife or something, you know, environment, because people love to talk about animals. The forum exploded, right? Why? It related to people's lives in a positive way. It related to people's lives. Everyone has a squirrel story. You know, got into my house, it ate my windows up, it did this and that. And in fact, it ended up being in the newspaper. Local paper did a highlight. So go to hardware store, buy trap, set trap, kill squirrel, end the public policy question. You know, grab a trap and kill a squirrel. Why must we destroy a living thing as a solution? Rocky and his friends are out of control. Try to eat a sandwich on the park bench. Quit telling people to move their squirrels into my neighborhood. We already have enough. And this final little quote was from a city council member. I ran on an anti-squirrel platform for student legislature at Syracuse University. It was my first election loss. As it turned out, the day or two after I did that post, I get a call. We're with the St. Paul Pioneer Press. We're doing a story on squirrels. We understand you're an expert. Now, it just so happens that when I did the story, as it turned out, there actually are or were more squirrels in the cities because about 5 years earlier, there was a drought, and a lot of squirrels came in looking for food and water. Then we had two El Nino years in a row, so the winter kill was much, much less. So I wasn't just making this up. There actually were more squirrels in town. And then I got a call about 3 weeks later. We're with Animal Control. We understand you're having trouble with squirrels. When does the government call you? So you even got better government service. So if this stuff inspires you, start a steering committee, find a forum manager, draft a charter, 100 people, and we'll help you open dynamic and useful issues forum anywhere, anytime participation. And you can do it on your own as well. So you can do it with us, you can do it on your own, and be part of our effort as we work to change local democracy forever. So the final slide here is we shift now into an open mode, and I'll take as many questions as people have. People who want to leave now can leave now. Appreciate you sticking with me. You've given me the time to hang out, so I'm going to give you the time to ask as many questions as you have. But here, if you go to edemocracy.org/if, you'll find a 6-minute video interview on television about issues forums. You'll find our guidebook. You'll find a link to our startup forum, which is on the wiki, where you actually can basically grab a template and start filling out stuff that move you toward a charter and recruiting the committee and all those different types of things. A lot of the stuff is a work in progress. It will be forever because we always want to continually improve what we're doing. So, all right. So I got a question here from Mike. I'm going to actually turn it on. I'm going to shift off of listen only, and we will now be able to hear each other. So
the conference
Mike,
is no longer in listen only mode.
So Mike asked a question about tips about getting the steering committee started. What kind of time commitment? That's a good question. So, you know, obviously you need at least one person or two people who are willing to spend, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 hours, whatever it might be, to pull together the startup process. You know, recruiting additional participants to be on that committee. It's a good idea to have one or two meetings. We'll set up an online team for you that so you can do some interaction there. But getting together at a coffee shop or wherever it might be is a really important first step. And while the person who starts the steering committee may or may not be the forum manager, it often is. But then it'll be important to obviously find someone to sort of be the committee chair who isn't the forum manager so that there's a sort of accountability thing built in. And then the next big time suck, I guess, would be actually getting out there physically at community events to recruit. That takes real time. So questions that people might have. If you're in a noisy location and you can put your own phone on mute, please do that. Otherwise, you know, we'll just keep it open. So I'm ready for the first question, please. answer all your questions? Are y'all going to fall asleep on me?
No, this is...
All right, Jack. Is Jack still on there?
Jack, did you ask if I was still on?
I did, Jack. I said you're there. I know you guys are in the middle. So you just sent me a question. You asked me a question via email. Why don't you repeat that question to me, and I'll give you an answer.
Yeah, we've gotten our local media, our local radio station, WTIP, and our local newspaper, the News Herald, involved as sort of sponsors to help us. But the newspaper has requested kind of an idea of how can they be...
Okay.
How can they be like branded?
Hello?
They would want to know. They want some recognition as being a helper or a sponsor.
Hello, how are you?
And I'm having a little trouble with that. I was wondering if anybody else has ever done that, and what they've used as we might be able to give them some pat on the back, some identity, rather than just viewing the forum as an entity in itself, and you understand the question.
Jack, it's a great question because, I mean, when we started building, who's on the cell phone right now? If you could just mute your phone.
Definitely.
Hey, Jennifer? Jennifer Moore, what's your number? I want to mute you. Oh, but anyway, so much fun. Anyway,
thank you for calling me. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. Okay, so anyway, Jack, with the newspaper, when we first started these types of forums, I'm going to put you in listen-only mode when I reply to this. Okay.
The conference is now in listen-only mode.
Okay, so to answer Jack's question, when we first started, newspapers didn't do these types of interactive spaces, and in most communities, newspapers actually are one of the ideal places for this type of exchange. What we're finding is that in smaller towns where the newspapers aren't doing their own reader comments, or they have them, but they're actually open to working with others, they don't see this as competition. They see it as an opportunity for their community. But to be completely honest, a lot of newspapers view any type of local interactivity as potentially competition or a threat. And if they're monetizing their own types of forms of banner advertising and the like, you know, they're less likely to participate. Radio stations tend not to do forums like newspapers do. But here's what I would say to them, assuming, even if they have reader comments, so rather than be the blunt thing first, I would basically say, first they can take a feed from the forum and present the posts within their look and feel. For people to reply, they have to go to the site. So basically gives them something they can present. You're creating an environment where you're going to have a more civil, respectful, useful dialogue that is different than what anyone else can do. The other piece is that it's happening in their community. They're an important, vital part of the community. They should be part of this just as everyone else is. They don't want to miss the boat by not being part, you know, a sponsor of this and having that linkage back to the forum and being able to sort of take credit for it. It's something that they're helping promote and be part of. It is really useful, obviously, to have media partners and to sort of build those relationships out. You know, if they see it in their interest to sort of help promote it and be part of it, they could also reprint content from the forum. They can find sources of people who might want to write a column out of a post and seed more things into the forum. I think if they don't have their own forum currently or if they have limited commenting, I think it actually might be a real win-win for them. I would present it that way. But let's, you know, be honest, and really in larger towns where they maybe have a full-time web person for the local newspaper or whatever, they're more likely to basically take our ideas and adapt them for their own environment. So I'll go back to off of listen-only mode here.
The conference is no longer in listen-only mode.
All right, there are a couple more questions out there. All right, well, I know I covered lots and lots of details, so I want to give folks, this is the last thank you. And if you want to have others, we're going to have I'm going to call it a knowledge raiser, where if folks missed it, we're going to, at least for a little while, make it available for a small donation to sort of watch one or both of the webinars. And I really appreciate you tuning in today, and we'll see you online. Thanks so much, everyone.
Thank you. Please stand by.